Today, it's Edwin's Monday Evening Property Rant. Hello again, it's Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics, one of the latest posts covering finance and property news with a distinctively Australian flavour. And just before we start, a quick reminder that tomorrow, Tuesday at 8 p.m. Sydney time, I'll be joined live by Damien Klassen from Nucleus Wealth. And he and I are going to discuss the Santa Rally or bust. In other words, what's happening in the investment markets now and what's going to happen as we come through to the end of this year and into 2021. So feel free to join us at 8 p.m. Sydney time, and of course you can ask a question live. And as it's Monday, I have Edwin with me once again. Hi, Edwin.
Hello, Martin. It's all happening. I think there's no rest for the wicked, and 2020 has been one of those wicked years, and we're still going on till right all the way to the end.
It does feel a bit like that, doesn't it? You know, you sort of think, well, it must be nearly there, but I tell you, there's so much going on. I've had lots of new requests for data and a lot of new information coming out, even though this week and next week. So, yes, right out, down to the wire, I think.
Look, I think it's going to continue on to next year. There's our team, we're not stopping. We're going all the way through. At the end of the day, not a lot of people are going overseas, as you know, but they are jumping the border from what we've seen. They're all migrating north, they tell us. They're going... head north to Queensland, but once they find out that Queensland don't have the accessible jobs, I guess they'll be heading back down south again. But we're going to talk about that, and I guess we're going to talk about a few other things that are happening out there in the greater property landscape.
Well, that's right, and we'll also get to your thoughts with regard to those property inspection reports, because there's a lot of shenanigans going on there too, isn't there?
Oh, look, it's absolutely incredible what people are doing. I just can't believe the fact that people are buying, as we've said before, Martin, they're buying $1 million, $2 million, $3 million, $4 million, $5 million properties and relying on the building and pest reports that agents and vendors are providing, which absolutely show 20%, if that, of the defects in homes. Look, there has to be the regulators have to jump in. There's a lot of shenanigans going on with that, and we're gonna expose some of it today. But look, wasn't a great time that last week with Louis Christopher. I thought what he had to share was absolutely amazing.
Absolutely, yes. I think a lot of the audience have commented on just how rich his data is, and his perspectives were well valued. And it's interesting because I know you and he have had a few different points of view over the years, but there's a lot of alignment, isn't there, as well?
Oh, look, I think you and I have slowly, brought him into line, Martin, I would say. Don't you think? Yeah, I mean... sooner than later, I'm sure he's going to also start saying bullshit on his Twitter feeds and on his interviews. But look, it is what it is, and I think reality is hitting home in a lot of areas. As you, myself, Tarek, a number of other people have keep on saying, this dust has not settled yet, and the can keeps on being kicked down the road, and the kitchen sink and the firstborn is being sacrificed in order to keep this property bubble happening, and it just keeps on going on and on and on. Even Mr. Rudd's getting in on the action. What do you think about that?
Yeah, well, that's right. I was just trying to think, how can you sacrifice a kitchen sink? But I won't go there.
No, the firstborn, Martin, the firstborn. Yeah, you throw the kitchen sink and you sacrifice the firstborn afterwards when that doesn't work.
Get it round the right way. No, afraid. But no, Mr. Rudd, well, he's, you know, very interesting observation here, right? Because basically he's calling monopoly, isn't he?
Well, he is, but it's interesting what he's doing. I reckon he must have watched the show that we did with Louis Christopher last week, and we unleashed the Kraken with regards to the fake data and the manipulated data that's out there in the mainstream. But I know where he's coming from in a way. But yeah, his call to boycott real estate. Seriously, it's I sort of liken liken that for the real estate agents to boycott the real estate agents public and anybody that's listing the property for sale or for rent on REA. I liken that to for a call on boycotting ABC Tissue or Kimberly Clark, and we don't go out and buy toilet paper. It's just one of those things, Martin, that there's necessities of life. The real estate industry is not going to boycott REA, no matter what you think. Domain, as I've said for many years, has probably 80% coverage as opposed to REA. But you have to have your listings on both in order to be to have any level of success, and you have to watch the listings on both in order to see what's truly out there in the marketplace.
Yeah.
And one doesn't allow private listings also, and the other one does.
Yeah, that's true. And it's interesting, of course, because he makes reference to climate misinformation, denial of peer-reviewed science, and then he goes straight into the real estate sector. So he's certainly calling on the data.
It's right. Look, it is interesting to see what people are coming up with. But look it's I think, like I said, it's two beasts that have been created that it's sooner than later it's just gonna they're going to chew up the industry. They're not as I said, Martin, in many I've been sharing with you for a number of years now that the next step that they're going to take is really take over the industry altogether. So it's a beast that you can't stop now. We can't stop it. It's a beast that, although it's making $2.4 billion combined annual income between Domain and REA, you've got $15 billion on the other side of the fence, which is what the real estate agents make over annually as combined income by way of commissions. It's something that they're just going to keep on taking advantage of that. I think that little tweet of his is really not going to get him much support, and there's nothing he can do. Look, the other thing is did Mr. Rudd buy shares in Domain as to call this out on REA is the other question that I'm asking myself.
Oh, that's a bit sneaky. Well, let's go on then to talk about another interesting commentary here about the US and people from the US looking at the Australian market.
Well, look, it's rather interesting how these obviously it's looking at the high end, the luxury end of the property market. But didn't we bring this out in our rants as well? What was about 5-6 weeks ago, where the WeChat chatterers over in America in the medical field were already discussing this, and they're already asking what is the quickest pathway in order to obtain PR, residency here in Australia. So it's really a permanent residency here in Australia. It's really interesting. So look, I've said for many years, I've said since I came to Australia and I could speak English, I said that Sydney is one of the greatest cities in the world, and Australia is one of the greatest countries in the world, if not the greatest. And I'll continue to say that. So we are looking very pretty when it comes to what's happening. Didn't Bill Gates also just say that America is not really going to recover until 2022, and although they're going to be rolling out the vaccine, there's going to be a lot of issues. So that's a lot of pain out there in the greater landscape in the world. So of course we're looking pretty. We're looking very, very attractive when it comes to high net worth individuals that are coming in. So unfortunately, guys, freestanding homes are becoming more and more desirable. And the other thing is that what we're noticing and what we're getting calls and being commissioned on is expats wanting to buy so that they can return home, because they themselves don't see a future in all parts of the world where they are, and they want to come home and buy and settle in. So they've made a fair bit of money and they want to buy.
Yeah, absolutely. And the fact that that Forbes is entering Australia's luxury property market, it's significant, and they say it's a game-changing model. Well, we'll see about that. But clearly demand at the top end is absolutely there and growing. And of course a lot of it isn't contingent upon mortgages, right? At the top end it's a completely different
model. No, it's not. Look, and a number of the people that have reached out to us from overseas, they're predominantly expats. They're coming in with 30, 40, 50% deposits. And properties are looking very, very attractive, and also they're coming in from very, very densely populated cities into space. So the North Shore, Lower North Shore, Upper North Shore becomes very attractive, and all the northwestern regions become very, very attractive for when you look at the landscape, how spread out it is, and it's going to be almost like a two-tiered or a two-product industry. When I say that, one is the freestanding homes, and the other one is, of course, the apartment. So we've seen the local shift from people dwelling in apartments and living in apartments, renting apartments, a major shift in exodus from high-rise apartments and developments, medium density to high density, to renting out further afield to have that space and that liberty. February, we've been talking about how the demographics was going to change and how the landscape was going to change. And I mean, we're just being ahead of the curve all along. And now it's only the mainstream are just catching up with what we've been saying for almost all year, Martin.
Mm. Yeah, it is. And it's interesting. If you go to the next one, AFR, of course, was out there spruiking once again, right? Home buyers abound as spring selling stretches into the summer. And ostensibly, they're claiming that there's been a huge flood of buyers. I'm not sure it's quite that straightforward, though.
No, it's a mixed bag. It really is a mixed bag. We know that the fact that as we've said from the many WeChat investment groups that we monitor, local investment groups that we monitor on WeChat and a couple in New Zealand and those that are also involved overseas, the Chinese community or Asian community are shifting their asset base, are shifting their asset base from opening up businesses, from leaving money in the bank, from apartments to freestanding homes. Why? Because they feel more secure. It's a long-term investment for them. It's a very, very long-term investment. And also the rental yields on homes are changing. So I guess because we haven't really had that upsurge in listings, it becomes almost over-exaggerated, one would say, as to what's really happening on the ground. This week, spoken to a number of agents. My colleagues have spoken to a number of agents, and we've been asking the question: why haven't we seen a lot more listings coming on? And a lot of them are saying it's twofold now. One is what we've said all along, and that is that the people are taking longer to prepare the properties to go to market. And then again, you look at the supply chains as well for materials; they're slowing down. So you've also got to look at the trades teams. A lot of the employees are stuck overseas because a lot of them were employing, students or foreign labour as well to give them going. So the construction or that sector, the trade sector, has slowed down. So the renovations have slowed down. And the second one is now people are starting to wait and see what's going to happen next year with all the freebies that the government's throwing in for the for the first home buyers and other type of buyers, and the laxing the proposed laxing of the banking regulations or the funding and so forth, and also your stamp duty changes as well. So it's a wait and see. But we feel very strongly that those that have to sell are going to sell, and they're going to. The market, it's an open market because it's 2020. It's people aren't traveling overseas, they're local. And as I said, we're going to be working right through the end of the year.
Mm. Yeah, it's interesting. And of course, in the article, they refer to CoreLogic, who says that prices could be back up to their all-time highs by as early as February. And then they also refer to the SQM research that we covered last week, although they didn't mention, which is what, of course, Louis said, was his base case is assuming that there's going to be further stimulus, right? So if there isn't further stimulus, then the rises aren't so strong. So once again, the AFR is giving it a very positive spin and probably rather myopically trying to talk the market up.
Yeah, look, again, because we never knew, we never knew, we'll never know what the drops were. And as we spoke with Louis Christopher last week, it's all, you know, smoke and mirrors with the data that CoreLogic puts out, and the data is so delayed. So again, did the market drop 10%? Did it drop 20%? Did it drop 15, 17? They will never tell us. They'll paint Sydney with one brush. They'll paint Melbourne with one brush. They'll paint Brisbane and every other capital city with the same brush. But we'll never really know. It's not until you look at specific markets and in depth that you find out the reality of how far some property values dropped. Like I've been posting on Twitter and I've been sharing with yourself and as we've been talking along throughout the year, how the vast difference in asking prices to actual selling prices, where in some cases we saw sales that went back to as far back as 2015 and 2013 for a few properties. Will we ever know? I don't think we'll never know. So yeah, you can spruik it, you can continue to pump it up, but look, not until you start looking, as you've coined the phrase, and until you start looking at things granularly, that you won't know. So Sydney's very broad and very vast and has many, many markets in itself.
Well, I'm talking about getting granular. The next article is quite interesting because High Rise Harry, Meriton guy, basically has been now asking for government help to help the high rise sector out, and basically saying it's very slow because there's no migrants and there's no students coming in, and therefore he's not actually shifting enough properties, so he wants some government support.
I think what the government should really step in and do something about is what he promised it would do from as far back as 2015, and that's look more closely at the building regulations and all the shit that was going on with that, and how they were supposed to put back doors and to protect the consumers, and look at Mascot Tower again. Now the commercial units in that tower have to be evacuated. They have to vacate. They've got a week to basically get out because the facades are falling over. I mean, they should tear that place down and just they should level it and just put a park on that block of land. An open park for the locals, for the area. It'll be better used. But it's ludicrous. And the only way that you're going to save the high rise or the apartment market, I feel, is really if you open up the international borders. And which government, and is the government, that does it have the cojones to really open up the borders? And which one will have the cojones to open up the borders, Martin? That's the $64 million question. Mm. So it's a market that's going to be spectacular in the way it crumbles. And I would say it'll be almost on par with a commercial space as well, because of all this notion of working from home and being able to work from home, and this whole changes of that this 2020 has brought about to this landscape. So it's going to be interesting to see what happens moving forward. How many businesses go back to occupy commercial space, how much commercial space they will occupy, how many people are gonna do their back end with regards to that invested with the super funds into commercial space predominantly, and how many super fund management companies are putting so much money into commercial space as well, that's really going to do its ass. I've got no other words for it.
Mm. Yeah, and of course, Harry, in the article, basically advocated for opening the borders and let them flood back. So it's quite interesting how that pushes there. I don't know whether the government is likely to roll over and provide yet more funding to the building and construction sector, but it wouldn't surprise me if they did, frankly. They know no other, do they?
No, look, it is interesting, but like Lindsay David keeps on saying, and that is, are they going to save the property market? Are they or they're going to save the banking institutions? Because quite frankly, I don't think that they'll save both, and it's just too big of a beast. It's just going to, how far are they going to encumber us and future generations to pay off these debts to save the high-rise Harrys of this world?
Good question, Edwin. Very good question. Now, here's another article. This, of course, is referring to Brisbane potentially overtaking Melbourne as the most livable and desirable place to live. And we've commented before, I think, that there's a bit of migration up towards Brisbane at the moment. I think it's not quite so dramatic as some are writing about, but it's an interesting observation, isn't it, in terms of the relative attractiveness of Melbourne versus Brisbane?
Well, look, it is, Martin, and I guess people are going to do that transition, which you and I, again, we were speaking about this 6 weeks ago, 5 6 weeks ago. We brought this up. We knew that the once the borders opened up in the Melbourne and Brisbane borders opened up, we knew that they were going to bypass Sydney because Sydney's just too expensive. And let's face it, Brisbane and the greater part of the Gold Coast and Queensland regions are very attractive when it comes to with regards to property prices and values. So it all goes back to this notion of working from home, working remotely. But again, the big question for 2021 is how many businesses are going to start looking further afield from paying their employees that are working from home, that are working remotely, and looking for cheaper alternatives as well. Because if they can employ somebody, if somebody can work remotely, well, they can also start looking for cheaper alternatives. Now, again, in the chatter that we monitor locally, and this is in the local WeChat chatter that we monitor, a lot of particularly accountants that are in these groups and brokers and particularly in that financial sector, their employers are asking them to train juniors. Now, what do you think's happening there? The government's obviously going to subsidise the juniors or the under 35s that they're going to employ to pay 2/3 of the wage that they're paying the senior executive. So they know that they're going to be training these juniors inevitably to take over their positions, and some of them have already gone and left and have been sacked from banking from the banking sector as well. And guess what? They're driving Uber now.
Yeah, that's right. Well, of course, the government incentive schemes is biased towards employing younger people, right? Because businesses get paid if they take those younger people.
Yeah, of course, and that's where you're going to find out that the biggest one of the biggest employers or industry that employ people in Queensland, one would say, apart from mining, of course, is also the hospitality and tourism. So, I mean, that's in a world of caca, as you know, not only in Queensland, but all over Australia. And so, where is the employment going to come from? I mean, are they going to continue to build homes out at Ipswich, out at Redbank and build more medium density in Logan City, where they sell it to people in New South Wales and in Melbourne for under a two-tier marketing campaign? I mean, again, it's another one of those $64 million questions, and the dust is yet to settle on a lot of these the so-called shiny new and shiny experiences that people are willing and prepared to have and move from one state to another on this hope of change. Look, obviously, if you don't have a mortgage, if you don't owe anything, and you can sell and move, why not? I mean, Queensland has great weather, and it's a change from a cold, dreary Melbourne, I imagine.
Well, interesting. Of course, they've got a bit of weather up there at the moment. But talking of dust settling, it's worth just reflecting on the iron ore price, right? It's 152 US, which is an all-time high. And it's quite relevant because later on this week, we get the mid-year budget update, right? And I think there are two factors that we should think about. The first is iron ore price, which will be very high. The other is the 100 billion plus that the ABS has reported that the government has paid to businesses to help them through over the last few months, right? I mean, those are huge numbers, and it shows you just how distorted the whole market is. And going back to how weird 2020 is, I think this is another reflection. You know, we are at a very exposed, because if that iron ore price comes back, and frankly, it's China, you know, who's buying at the moment, then we could be in significant issues. But the other is the amount of money that the government's thrown at businesses is just quite remarkable.
And they're hoping, and how many of these businesses are as what you and Tarek have been talking about for months, how many are they zombie businesses? How many are they zombie companies that are just infecting other businesses that are providing them with goods and services that they'll never pay back? And how big is that? How big and how deep is that? Is that cancer that the government has allowed to just fester in the business community? That's, you know, again, I keep on saying this dust, the dust in many aspects of our economy has to settle before we can really say what's going on. But look, this, I guess we'll just have to wait until March next year, Martin, and see what happens. But with regards to iron ore and prices and China, it's all, you know, China's offering to test there or provide vaccines to Brazil in order to, you know, for the Brazilians to take it up so they can go forward and move forward post the COVID infection there as well. But what we're hearing is that 60% are skeptical, and I don't blame them, because even the medical professionals in China don't want to take it up themselves. They can say the army can take it on, but we're not going to participate in that, because they, quite frankly, there's no real data as to what the side effects is going to be. Then again, you've got to also look at China looking closer at Africa. So it's only a matter of time as to whether or not China starts buying iron ore from anywhere else other than Australia, and let's see how we cope with that. And it's going to be short term and medium term pain. But, you know, in a way, it's going to be, you know, it's going to help our government to stop relying on one source or one income source or one importer, you know, of our goods, and look further afield, look for other trade partners in order for us to not to be in the same position that we find ourselves now.
Yeah, well, we'll see, I guess, on Thursday. People are suggesting that there's something like a $30 billion dollar extra value come back to the economy thanks to the high iron ore price, which will support the overall economy and which may actually improve the results. But it really is very narrowly based, and as you say, if the wind changes and suddenly our iron ore falls out of favor, we don't have much to fall back on, really, do we? So interesting to see, I guess. Now let's move on finally to this very important conversation about inspections in our Property in Focus.
Look, it's something that a lot of people have DM'd me on Twitter, and they want to, and a lot of people that I've spoken to post our videos have reached out and have asked a lot more questions. And it was peculiar, the fact that obviously people are more interested because they themselves thought that they could rely on building and pest inspections, that reports that are provided by agents and by the vendors. But this particular scenario is one that I wanted to share in more detail. Now, for legal reasons and for obvious reasons, I don't want to leave this world just yet, Martin. I've got to, I value my life a little bit more. But then again, so we won't identify the company. But what we can say is that these two building reports that you'll show on your screen, they are provided by the same company. And it's for the same, from the same company, and it's for the same property, and it's within a month apart. The reports are vastly different in what they show, and this is just the summary. The front one of the summary pages, where the report provided by the vendor's agent, and on behalf of the vendor, obviously commissioned by the vendor or the vendor's agent in this case, commissioned this company to provide a building and pest report, doesn't even note the structural issue with that obviously was found by the one that I commissioned on behalf of one of our clients, and doesn't identify that. Doesn't identify a lot of other major issues in the structural integrity of the building, water ingress, which it's leading to, and a lot of that ingress is from the sewer pipes that is just pouring out. I mean, in the report, that's provided by the agent, it's the. In one paragraph, it actually says that there wasn't one of the areas of major concern wasn't accessible. I mean, the access point for that was the access point was a doorway that was about 120 high and almost 800 millimeters wide. And this is 1,200 millimeters high and 800 millimeters wide. That was the access point. And in the report that the vendor provides, it says the building, the inspector says that he couldn't access the subfloor area because it was hard to get in. I mean, he must have been one giant of a man bun. I mean, I could only imagine the size. He would have been bigger than. Than an elephant, I'd imagine. I don't know, but it was amazing, and that's where you find the rest of the issues in this house.
Right. So basically, what you're saying is there were two reports, right? But they were actually conflicting, despite the fact that they were made by the same company within a month of each other.
Yes, and on the same property. Now, to put it even into greater perspective. When you looked at the bottom line as to what it would cost to rectify the issues identified by one report, let's say the one provided by the agent on behalf of the vendor, you would think that it would only it would be within $50,000 to $60,000 to do any works to any property, which is understandable. I mean, the property's built in the early 80s, and it's going to have its issues. Whereas the report that was produced by that we commissioned on behalf of our client, we identified with the builder, because he's a builder, this fellow provided the report as well. We identified close to $250,000 worth of rectification work on the property.
That's a bit of a different total. It means the price is going to have to be adjusted, right?
Yeah, it's going to have to be, and that's just to start, and that's just the starters, Martin. Mm. Because as you know, when you start doing renovation work, you think you what you see is one thing. What you end up having to do is 180 degrees of where you started from, and that's if you're lucky. If you don't keep on finding more and more and more, so it was a recommendation to our buyers, walk away, because the owners of the property were sticking to their pest and building report, and they didn't want to drop the price. And we're talking about a $2.3 million property, Martin. Mm.
And that's really the point, isn't it? Because I've always, my big bugbear is this, that a lot of the inspection reports are pretty much boilerplate. And they, use standard terminology. And then they have these huge disclaimers and disclosure things at the bottom to basically say it's not our fault if we haven't found it, basically. So they really don't add a huge amount. And you know, if you've had one done by the vendor and it gets spread around the place, you can't rely on it, can you? You have to actually do your own work and really go into more detail and really check those issues. And even then, you know, you've really got to do some work to really understand, particularly on an older property, what the real risks are.
Exactly, and I've been doing a bit of work in the inner west and looking at terraces in the inner west and obviously the party walls that start having issues, and we're talking about properties that are 100, 120, 140 years old, and you're going to have issues, and when you've got attached when you've got party walls on both sides of the dwelling or that you're buying, and you're going to rely on a flimsy report that tells you, oh yeah, everything's okay, and next thing you know, you've got issues with your neighbours because your neighbours are blaming you for the issues, and you know, it's on properties that are so old. And as I keep on saying, we've spoken about many a times, and that is that a lot of the freestanding homes and a lot of these areas that have become desirable to a lot of people, and people are paying in the millions for, they're very old, and these dwellings need attention. So what you find is you've got a lot of dwellings that have got makeshift renovations or renovations to cover up major issues, and unless you've got an eye to see this, unless you've got an eye to see beyond the makeshift renovations, it's hard. People get fooled, so it's not easy. It's not it's and as much as people say, an industry that is has a lot of smoke and mirrors, the transactions, the price discovery, it's so flawed. One would say it's so corrupt in favor of vendors, and you really have to reach out to professionals that are going to act on your behalf. And unfortunately, it means that you're going to have to spend a little bit of money to do so, but it's money well spent in my view.
Yes, and I also think that you should add to the list checking the wiring, checking the plumbing, you know, all of those things too, because quite often they are not adequately overviewed by the general inspector, as it were. And I guess the other point that I'll come back to is that if you've gone through a very dry summer, for example, it may well be that at the time when the inspection is being done, there's less evidence of damp than some other times, right? But if you have a really wet period, suddenly it all comes back. So that's the other thing to bear in mind. Just because it doesn't register very strongly in terms of damp doesn't mean there isn't any.
That's right. Look, and there are many tools that are available, and there are many telltale signs that we become familiar with to see what's really happening, and at the end of the day, you really got to get somebody that's going to move furniture around, move things around, because a lot of these inspectors just it's a visual inspection, yeah. And they'll say that straight out in the report. It's just a visual inspection. I'm not going to go further. I'm not going to move things around because it's too hard for these little bunnies to move things around. It's beyond them. They'll get the nails. They might bend a nail or two, and they'll have to go and see a beautician or I don't know, just one of those things. But it's But at the end of the day, it is the transaction is prefaced by caveat emptor, buyer beware, and you've got to be aware of this. But unfortunately, they get misguided because they're dealing or speaking with the agent that's representing the vendors. So, and that's where this misinformation comes from, because buyers believe, and in the FOMO that's around at the moment, they're going to take everything to heart. They're going to believe everything that the vendor's agent says. Look, Martin, next week, hopefully I'll disclose the property in focus will be of one in a very highly sought after area where we've secured it for almost $350,000 below the asking price and in the hot market. So, you know, don't believe everything you hear. Don't believe everything that the selling agents sell you is happening. You got to go out and do your own research, and you got to go out and, you know, and do a bit of jousting, do a bit of boxing, do a bit of ducking and weaving. And as you say, Martin, you know, if not today, you know, your opportunity may be tomorrow.
Absolutely. Well, Edwin, as always, great advice there. And I think any vendor, you know, they may have a inspection report produced, but if you're a prospective buyer, do your own work. And don't take anything on trust at all, because, as you say, caveat emptor is there staring you in the face, and you don't really have much recourse once you've signed the contract and paid the money across.
No, that's right, and that's why it's like I said, it's all stacked up. People think that the selling agent's doing them a favor, but it's, you know, it's like the auctioneers. On the day of the auction, they come at you like as though they're doing you a favor by getting you to spend an extra $5,000 above what you can really afford, because it only represents, you know, one cup of coffee a day for the following year, as they put it, or some other rhetoric that they like to, you know, some other pundit they want to put out there. But you know, it is what it is. It's adversarial, and you just got to be prepared and prepare yourself. And you know, if you don't feel right about it, you know, get help.
Absolutely, everyone. Well, I appreciate your time today. Next week, of course, you'll be on Monday, and then you'll be on live on Tuesday, so people can ask you questions direct next week on our DFA live show on Tuesday at 8. So if people have specific questions, they'll be able to follow up specifically with you. But I appreciate your time today, and we'll do it again next week.
Sounds like fun, Martin, and let's see who can pulling next year for to join us on our Monday night rants. I mean, I'm hoping that you're roping Doc Wilson. That'll be interesting. And maybe Switzer. He's a mate of yours, isn't he?
I'll have anybody on who wants to come on. So, you know, open invitation to any of those in the property sector. If they'd like to come on and join our Monday evening rant, they just need to reach for me. I've had a few goes at getting some of those more bullish players to come on and talk with me, but they run away when I ask them.
Who knows, Martin? Who knows? But let's see who can get in there, and let's get Louis back on again and talk more in detail. Maybe next time, can we let's have a couple of shots of tequila before we start the Monday night rant with Louis? Maybe we'll get some more secrets out of him. You know, when he's a little bit tipsy. What do you reckon?
Oh, I don't know about that. We'll have to hatch a plot. Edwin, thanks once again. We'll see you soon.
Likewise, Martin. All the best.
Take care. Bye-bye. So there you have it. More great insights from Edwin. And mark your diaries. Tuesday, the 22nd of December at 8 p.m. Sydney, Edwin will be on the live show on Tuesday. And you can ask him a question direct. I'm Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics. Many thanks for watching. And I'll see you again next time.